This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. Go to braintreepayments.com/whatthetech for more information. What the Tech? Hey, buddy, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Are you at the same location today?
I am. I turned the thing around, so it's a different view.
Yeah. You are still on vacation or not vacation? What are you on? You're in someone else's home right now.
I am. That's probably the easiest way to say it. Yeah, you know, we do the home swap every summer, so we're in a home in near Lyon, France.
You're still in Lyon, you got sick over the weekend.
Yeah.
What happened?
That was not fun. I don't know. I actually have no idea. I can't tie it to anything. The food here is pretty incredible, and incredible in a number of ways. I mean, it's obviously fantastic, but it's also, you know, we've been all over France, and the food here is very rich, and the portions are humongous, I think, even by American standards. And I don't know what caused it. I can't pinpoint a food item that was weird. I mean, I've certainly eaten my share of offal and intestines and things that. But I like that stuff. I don't always eat it, but I eat it when I can eat it. It's not very common in the U.S. But
are you a fan of foie gras?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, and actually, that's a good example. So in the United States, if you get foie gras, usually as an appetizer, right? You wouldn't get it as a meal. You could here, by the way. It would be a very small portion. I don't know if this makes sense, you know, on the screen, but I've gotten portions this big, an inch thick, and two of them on the plate.
Wow.
We were just eating lunch today, and I have resolved. I need to eat less of this food and eat less food in general, probably, but eat less of this food and be a little more careful with what I eat. But I watched a woman devour that thing I just described, those two pieces of foie gras today at lunch.
That's really rich.
It was an appetizer.
Yeah, would be overwhelming.
Right. I also saw a woman, you know, you're familiar with steak tartare, right?
Yeah.
Which is uncooked hamburger, essentially. A huge portion. I mean, if you picture the size of like a Whopper, right? A Whopper hamburger. Whopper hamburger patty is about, you know, it's really thin. This thing was about 3 inches tall, but the size of a Whopper. And I pointed to the kids. I was like, look at this thing. And I said, there's no way this woman's going to eat this. She was half my size and she ate the whole thing. I don't know what to say. I mean,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, I was in, Los Angeles. And I was building a studio out in L.A., and we were planning on doing a show last week, but it just got nutty. I had to finish doing the studio and didn't work, and then you got sick. So we said, you know what? We'll skip this week. No worries. We'll do the show next week. We'll go back to our regular schedule. It gets crazy in the summer. I feel like that's just how it is, and especially now with all the Windows 10 stuff happening, which I want to talk about, because there's a lot of panic over the last week over security issues and privacy issues, which some are valid and some are a little bit blown out of proportion here.
Most of them are complete baloney, yep.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. I have a lot of questions for you, Paul. A lot of questions. Before we get into the hard stuff, the nitty-gritty stuff, I want to take a moment to talk about our sponsor, and that's Braintree. What is Braintree? So if you are a web developer, if you are building a website, if you are a business owner and you are planning on taking mobile payments, this is the best service for you. It makes mobile payments very easy. If you go to braintreepayments.com/whatthetech, you can sign up there. Your first $50,000 in transactions are fee-free, which how could you not like to be able to accept payments and not pay, you know, that certain percentage of whatever it is to the merchant. Some of the companies that use Braintree, Uber, Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social, the list goes on and on. Talk to your mobile developer. Talk to your web developer to see if this is something that you could possibly implement. It accepts PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, every single credit card type, every single payment system. I was just talking to my friend Sean, and guess what? He developed an app, and he put Braintree in it, and he said it worked like a charm. Couple lines of code, 1, 2, 3, all finish. No problems. Learn more about Braintree, and for your first $50,000 in transaction fee freeze, go to BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. That's BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. I want to thank Braintree for supporting the show and, of course, for supporting What the Tech and JFK Network. What's going on, Paul? So let's talk about this. Where do we begin? Yeah, so so they released an update last week. SR1 got released, which was a lot of bug fixes and anything else. I mean, we could just cover this really quickly.
I got a short list. I never even published anything about it. It was like some Cortana fixes, some I think VPN stuff, just general bug fixes and so forth. There's actually, as we're recording this, Microsoft has apparently just released another cumulative update of some kind. But I think this is related to a problem that the store has been having for the past couple of days. So it's not really clear yet what's going on there.
So what was in this update that we got? Was it bug fixes? I know a lot of people are confused over why it was so big.
It's cumulative.
Yeah.
So, I mean, actually, depending on your system, you may have had some of the stuff that's in the update. So this is really aimed at people who just installed Windows 10 and, you know, they get this big update instead of a bunch of little things that they have to reboot a bunch of times or whatever. So it probably wasn't all that big for most people. I think it was less than 300 megabytes, or I think it was pretty small.
I think people, I mean, from what I saw, people were saying that it was pretty big. I did the update, obviously. It was just bug fixes. People are freaking out. Well, already they're putting out an update. Well, this is how it's going to be, right? They're going to constantly be changing things. I don't know why people were really, really panicky about, oh my God, look at this gigantic update they're releasing already.
They released updates for Windows 10 before Windows 10 was released.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, you don't worry about stuff like that.
How has the reception been for you over the last week since we've done the show? Has anything changed? Have the complaints kind of settled down? Have we discovered new issues?
Yeah. The first week was horrific, and I really don't think that there are like endemic problems with Windows 10 per se. I just think that's what happens, right? The whole body of users out there that really wanted this thing went and got it. And you know, like I've been predicting for months and months, you know, that's what happens. You go from 5 million insiders, or 6 million now, I guess, to tens of millions of people and eventually hundreds of millions.
On all different types of computers, on all different types of system configurations.
And these people have crazy configurations with RAID, and they have storage spaces, and they have machines that were not okayed for the upgrade, but they're power users, and they're going to go ahead and do it anyway. And it's fine. And I'm not blaming anyone, or I'm certainly not making fun of anyone, or whatever, even really complaining. It's just that for me personally, this was awful timing. You know, I've got this book I've been working on for a few months now, and was planning on October, and then they changed it to July, and there's absolutely no way that could be finished in time for that. And the trip that I'm on now started right before this thing launched, which is an awful time for me to be away from home, and it's busy. And we also, I think we talked about this a little bit last week. Not that anyone cares about my schedule, but we have a schedule when we're on these trips. And normally the middle of the 3 weeks is when we kind of go away and actually go on like a vacation. And knowing that this was all happening, we scheduled a much shorter actual vacation because of some other schedule stuff. It was the first week, so it was right up front. So it was all very hectic. I never actually took any time off. And I know there are hundreds and hundreds of people out there who are wondering why I never even responded to their email. But the truth is, it was overwhelming for a really long time. And so it's still not, kind of where I want it to be. Or nothing is. I mean, the email, my book, whatever. But it's definitely settling down. And that's kind of to be expected. You know, we're starting to get answers to questions. We're starting to see some of the common problems be resolved. I think this update today will resolve an issue that people have been having with the store, like I said, and you know, things will eventually calm down in some capacity, I hope. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten a lot of feedback. Obviously, I'm curious if we were the first ones to talk about that network bug, where it puts it into public, like it becomes a public network instead of a private network. Have you had the issue since turning it into a private network?
Have I had the issue? So, I mean, I think the wireless router that's here, the internet, you know, the connection here, I think it's just a little unique. So there are things like that. But yes, I mean, going and making that connection private is actually good advice. In fact, I'll tell you, because that came up, I looked at the section on networking in the book. Actually, was it? No, I'm sorry. I put this into the, it was like, you know, post setup tasks or post upgrade tasks. Like, there's a list of things you do. Like, so you've upgraded or installed Windows 10. What should you do next? And you kind of step through a list of things in order. And one of them is click on network and it will say, that thing will come up. And you should, if it is a private network, make it a private, you know, make Windows understand it's a private network, because there's a bunch of functionality in Windows 10 that gets turned on when it knows it's on a private network around device and machine discovery. It allows you to connect to, you know, other PCs and shares and all that kind of stuff. So I ended up actually adding that to the book.
You're welcome.
Oh, which is, by the way, dedicated to Andrew Zarian, my tech support hero.
Yeah, that's the one contribution I've had to the world of Windows at this moment.
No, that
I was able to do this. Let's touch on the privacy issues here. A lot of people freaking out over this. I, for one, turned off a lot of the stuff because I'm one of those people that likes to fiddle around and turn off anything and everything that I do not want to use and not want to function. A lot of misconceptions. You have a great article on Therat.com about this, about what people I'm sorry?
I think it's actually on Petri. Is it on Petri? Or
I saw it on Therat.
It's on Petri. I linked to it on Therat, but
It's on Petri. And you go down the list of, you know, the concerns that are some of overblown, but it's a perception issue. The perception matters in this case.
A lot of it is. Yeah. Somebody from a, I think it was a publication in the UK, if I'm not mistaken, reached out to me and asked me some questions about this. And here's the thing. The thing, it's funny. I don't think I wrote this explicitly in the article, but I said, you know, there's something kind of amusing about people who are technical complaining about, you know, clicking through setup so they can get to Windows 10 really quick and not realizing that there's a whole opt-in section of setup that you can dive into and say, I want this and this and I don't want this. And I believe that something like 99% of users probably skip right over it. You know, they don't even look at it. You know, do you want the express setup? Oh, yes, I want this to go fast. You know, if you take 5 minutes, you can step through about, I think it's two or three screens in Windows 10 setup, where every single feature that's come up in this kind of privacy debacle is a checkbox, or actually it's this little slider thing or whatever, but it's like a Windows 10 version of a checkbox. And you can turn them off if you don't want them, you know. The other thing I just point out is that, and we can go through the features, but I mean, these features are all things that can be disabled at any time too if you don't want this stuff. But I think most of this is baloney. There is one feature in Windows 10 I have a little bit of an issue with. It's not really privacy related, but this, I would say most, if not all, of the privacy stuff that people have brought up is a non-issue.
Okay, so let's talk about the peer-to-peer aspect, right, for Windows updates.
That's the one.
Yeah, so I want to go into detail about this. With the peer-to-peer, I understand the aspect of it downloads it, and then you could share it among your network, your personal network, your local network.
Right.
What about it using you as, I guess, a source for this file, right?
Right.
That people could download it from you. Is that something that people should be concerned about? I mean, I understand people not wanting to do that.
Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry. I'm getting work-related questions. And I mean, like, from work, not like Windows-related. This feature, this thing that you're asking about, this thing that people are complaining about, right? Which is really hidden in advanced options for Windows Update. I have a problem with this because I don't think that there's an issue sharing updates with other computers in your home network, especially if it's a private network, right? Because that saves bandwidth. And there's no disadvantage to doing this.
Yeah.
If your PC is online and you've downloaded the update, and that PC and that PC and that PC need the update, it's quicker and easier to get it on the local network. It's common sense. The problem is, by default, Microsoft configures this so that PCs on your local network and PCs on the internet can get and send updates to the PCs on your network. And that's crazy. Now, there is one exception which is not called out at all in this window you see if you look at this, which is this. If you're on what Microsoft calls a metered connection, meaning that it's been detected, and I don't know how they do this, but if you have like a cellular broadband connection, for example, you can also manually set any connection as a metered connection. That would be one way to kind of screw around with this if you wanted to, I guess. But it will not do this, right? Because you're paying for bandwidth. You might have a limit per month that you use, and this kind of thing could push you over the limit, and that would be kind of a terrible thing to do to you. But automatically configuring someone's PC to act as what is essentially like a BitTorrent host is crazy.
Yeah, that is a little nutty. And it was on by default for...
It is on by default.
Yeah.
For everybody.
Even if you go through that express, I guess, custom process, is it still on by default if you choose to do...
Oh,
advanced or whatever it was called?
That I don't recall.
From what I remember, I did go through advanced. I didn't see an option to turn it off.
I don't remember that one in there. Yeah, so I don't think so because this one is not considered a privacy thing, right? There's no privacy violation from this, right? This is more of a kind of a bandwidth, it's kind of a secretive thing, which I don't like, but it's a bandwidth issue. I think conceptually many people having heard the description of what this thing is would say, yeah, I don't want that. I don't like that. The notion that people are kind of, zipping into your computer somehow and grabbing code off it, even though that's not exactly what's happening, I think would be a little troubling to people. And I don't like it. I don't like that that's on by default. It's sort of like SETI, right? You can download this program and you can, usually in the middle of the night when the computer's not doing anything, like SETI can use like 1% of your computing power or something, and you can share your resources with the world and do a good thing for mankind. It's a wonderful thing to do. I mean, honestly, this is a wonderful thing to do. You have to opt into it.
You have to opt into it.
You can't force people to donate to charity. Well, it has to be a choice, right?
Well, do we know how much bandwidth it's actually using and how much?
We know nothing.
Yeah.
There's no information. And that's the problem. Yeah. So I think the thing I would just say about this is that, and I might have mentioned this before, but back as long ago, I don't remember what version, I shouldn't say, but Windows Server 2003 or 2008 probably. Probably 2008, Microsoft came up with something called branch cache for server. The notion was that, same exact kind of thing, you've got branch offices in this kind that are over like weak WAN links. You get a bunch of PCs in there. They all need to get all the updates. If every one of them hammered that weak WAN link, they wouldn't be able to get work done because the connection was so bad. So what they did was they did this kind of system where any PC that downloaded any update could then share it with the other PCs on the local network.
Yeah, which I mean that's a positive. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Adding it to the internet though, right? I mean that's a completely different scenario. The theory here is everyone has broadband, but the truth is everyone doesn't have broadband or doesn't have acceptably fast broadband.
Yeah.
On my home connection, this would be fine. I don't really care. It would be okay. But honestly, in the book, I advise turn this off. This is dumb. And you can leave it on for your local network. I think that makes sense for everybody. But having that, I just cannot believe that's on for the internet. That is an astonishing default. And I think is a lapse on their part.
It's a little invasive. I mean, that's a little pushy and a little in your face. I mean, and I'm thinking of scenarios where you would kind of hate this, right? Because we don't know how much bandwidth it's going to utilize. We don't know how often it's going to ping. But imagine if, you just have 4G access and you get, 20 gigs of 4G access and you really don't need anything more than that. And it starts using that in the background. Or there are people that have caps. Well, they have severe caps.
Theoretically, it would detect that.
Theoretically, it would know. Yeah, I guess. But we don't know how. We don't know how it knows.
Right. And like I said, you can mark a network connection as being a metered connection. So you can do that. I mean, but it's better just to go in and turn this thing off. There's no reason to even think about this. Just turn it off. Stupid.
Have you played around with group policy editor, Paul? Have you done that yet?
I have, yeah.
Because I did. So I could turn off certain functions in Windows Defender. So I absolutely hate it.
Jeez. Okay.
And let's see if I got it here. There we go. So, and then I realized that you have no access to group policy editor if you are not on a home version, a pro version.
If you're on a, right. Yeah, you need to be on pro.
You have to be on pro to do this. So I was trying to walk someone through turning some stuff off. And he's like, and they're like, I don't see it. I don't see what you're talking about. So I had to actually figure it out.
You can't do this from here, but every policy that's in there has a corresponding registry.
Yeah, you could do it within registry. Yeah.
So you could create a reg file that would basically accomplish the same thing on any system, home or pro.
So that
what you're doing is incredibly dumb.
It is. Yeah,
so I'm not going to advise this, but
yeah. I destroyed Firewall also. I tore everything apart because
just
I wanted
kind of collateral damage in your crazy quest.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason why I did that, I'm running Windows on a it's not an older machine. I mean, I guess so. It's a couple years old, but it's not a fast machine, right? It's that dual core AMD, and it's that A6 processor. And a lot of people, I've been getting a lot of emails from people, and they're after the last show that we did. I told everybody, if you're running a machine that ran Vista, for example, I don't recommend you going to Windows 10. That's my personal recommendation. That's how I feel. Maybe you feel differently. Maybe other people will recommend that you do Windows 10 because you're going to get better performance. I say go to 7 and be happy with it. But a lot of people are trying to run this on dual-core Intel computers. Sure. And the email that I've gotten is, I forgot the service name, but there's a service that's constantly running in the background. And it's using like 10, 12, 14% CPU resources for this one process. And it's part of Defender. That you, even if you turn Defender off, that you don't turn off that, I guess, service.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like malware protection something something.
Yeah, it sounds like something terrible.
It really sounds like it's terrible, and you got to download some sort of antivirus or malware protection, malware bytes to remove it. But this is part of Windows. So the only way to do that is by going to group policy editor and turning off that certain thing, turning the value to, never run it or whatever. And it actually fixed my problem. The CPU now, we're doing nothing. It's sitting at around like 2%. Well, before it was jumping to like 15 to 20%. And that matters if you have a slower machine. So for me, yeah, that made sense. 90% of you don't do that. Just stick with Windows 7 and call it a day. And this is what you have. You're going to save a lot of headaches. I also recommend putting an SSD on this thing. I have yet to run Windows 10 on a machine that does not have an SSD. Have you?
No. Well, yeah, sort of, right? So eMMC is not SSD.
Yeah, yeah.
Any hybrid? Yeah, I guess that's about it. I mean, Is eMMC faster than like a hard drive?
I don't think it is.
I mean, I don't think people understand how ancient that technology is, right? The SD cards that you put in cameras and into your devices and stuff is a newer version of the MMC standard. eMMC is an embedded version. I'm sorry, I should say MMC is the previous gen version of that. So this is from like a decade plus ago. eMMC is an embedded version of MMC. It's just, it's a tiny chip you can embed on a circuit board. They're unbelievably small, and they're not fast.
No,
they're not fast.
It's not for everybody, guys. Windows 10 will not work great on everything. We're not talking like the jump from Vista to 7, because 7 was a much Vista was a little bit of a hog, and I think a lot of people went to 7 on older machines, and they saw it was night and day. They were blown away by the performance increase. This is a little different because It's just it's not the same. It's two operating systems later. It's not one operating system later.
Yeah, and a lot of people are running those. The Vista class hardware is not necessarily great. I mean, I think there's a reason why with this version they supported 7 and 8 for upgrades or 81. Just the newer hardware makes all the difference in the world. You know, I think it was. I don't remember off the top of my head, but you know, Windows 7, I'm sure, supported XP and Vista upgrades. Windows 8, I bet it was Vista and 7. Well, I guess it's pretty consistent. I was going to say maybe at one point they. No, I bet Windows 8 did. I don't remember. I should know this. Did Windows 8 support Windows XP upgrades?
Did Windows 8 support Windows? I don't know.
I feel like I should know that.
That's a good question.
I don't know. Anyway, I think it's reasonable. I mean, yeah. When you know, 3 years between all those releases, 6-year-old hardware, you know, when you're hitting the 5-6 year range, it's time for a new PC.
Still don't have a lineup of new PCs, right? Any news? I saw one Lenovo that's like, you know what I'm talking about? It's like it's running a Xeon processor.
Yeah, no, that was just announced. That will ship with Windows 10, but that's not the point. You know, Windows. What you're looking for is a Windows 10 machine that has a Windows Hello camera, you know, and kind of new hardware like that, like some kind of a 2-in-1 or something. And we haven't seen anything like that yet. And I think it's going to be, you know, we'll see announcements in September, but I think it's going to be October-ish. It's going to be holiday season because that was always the plan. And so when Microsoft changed the schedule, you know, PC makers could very easily say, well, sure, we have these machines we've been selling for the past year. It's easy enough. We would do that anyway, put it on the existing machines. So they can do that to be ready for July 29th or soon thereafter. But as far as truly new hardware, everyone was counting on, you know, Silver Lake and RealSense cameras and whatever. And it just wasn't, you know,
Yeah. So, I mean, like Hello is not available.
Well, it's available. It's just not Lenovo devices or HP devices, other devices that have fingerprint readers. A lot of those are Hello enabled, but you know it's your fingerprint.
Yeah.
So I believe some Dell devices ship with RealSense cameras, and those can use Windows Hello with the camera. But these are not. It's not very common yet. And iris scanning. I don't believe there's a single device in the world.
I do not think there's anything that's able to do that right now.
Yeah.
Another email that I got, and it's going to be a lot of these questions. I'm just going through my email. Are with Windows 8 devices that are going to be Windows 10 devices that are going to be shipped? Are we looking at like the iris scanner? Are we looking at only the higher end machines that are going to have this, or are we going to see a lot of lower end and mid range systems having this feature because it is part of Windows 10 and it is, you know, it's kind of important, right? Not really to the core, but it's. It's part of the cool factor. It's part of that functionality of Windows 10.
So without having seen any of the devices that will support this kind of stuff, I mean, it's definitely going to be mid-range and up because it's a selling point. That's an upsell. You know, when Windows 8 is a terrible example, but let's say around the Windows 8 time frame, Windows 8 1 time frame, there were already great touch machines in market. But if you wanted to buy a $200 laptop or a $300 laptop, if you wanted to buy a $100, tablet's actually not an example, but let's say laptops, you weren't getting a touchscreen.
Yeah.
Right? That was how they got you. You know, with the tablets, obviously, you have to have a touchscreen. So, you know, they have the chintzy kind of storage. They've got really low resources, like 1 gig of RAM in some cases, which is terrible. You know, terrible screens. They have to cut corners somewhere. And it's sort of like the doorbuster thing. You know, you want to get people in the door and then hopefully you upsell them to something that makes more sense. And so I think the key for this Windows 10 stuff is that people see it and see how awesome it is. And that's not going to be good because Best Buy is terrible and most electronic retailers are pretty terrible. But, you know, maybe you come in for the $300 HP Stream and you say, well, actually for $600 or $900, I can get this thing that's a lot better.
Yeah. I don't know what to do, Paul. I need one now, but I'm getting a little impatient with waiting.
Need one what? What do you need, though?
I need a mid to higher end, really pretty laptop.
So I can't show you this laptop because I'm using it right now.
Uh-oh. Okay.
But, you know, for about $1,000.
Yeah.
You could get a gorgeous 8 gigs of RAM, I think 128 gigs of storage or 256. I'm not sure the configuration. HP Spectre X360.
I like the Dell XPS 13, but it only comes in an i5 from what I remember.
And it's small too. That may not be a problem for you.
And
actually,
it's bezel-less.
Yeah, but that also means that the webcam is not at the top; it's down at the bottom. So you get that kind of up chin.
Is
look
it really?
Instead of, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because there's no bezel. You know, there's no room for it.
That's so stupid.
It's very strange.
Yeah, that's really bizarre why they would do that. It's like that weird, what was that flip thing that they came up with a couple of years ago? Do you remember that?
Yeah, like, that was also, it was an XPS 11 or something.
Yeah, and you could see through the sides.
The wireframe.
Yeah,
because it was a frame and it flipped, you know, it spun.
I went to go look at the thing. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And I actually held it. I'm like, I can see the other side of this. Because it wasn't right. Like plush.
Like put it sideways and kind of just.
Yeah.
Like,
it was bizarre. Yeah. It's an interesting time. I think in October when they really put that big update out, we're going to really start seeing, you know, a lot of these hardware, a lot of the things starting to get pushed. Have people, and I got a couple of these emails too. A lot of people are saying that performance wise, it's not, they're having some performance issues with certain hardware types. I don't know if this is on older hardware or we're just seeing some sort of driver issues. I know that there was that NVIDIA bug early on, but sure. I've been looking at some benchmarks and it's not at the best performance for some things that people are doing. So I don't know if this is something that Microsoft is aware of and they're going to push out with the next wave, or this is just very specific to the hardware types and drivers are going to fix this.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I've been running largely Windows 10 for so long. In my opinion about performance, you know, vis-a-vis Windows 8.1 is kind of useless. I mean, I used 8.1 on the Spectre for a long time. I'm using, I've never noticed this kind of thing, but I tend to use, you know, higher end hardware. So I'm not sure what to say. I mean, obviously drivers are going to be an issue. Drivers can come out anytime, right? There's no, you know, it doesn't have to wait for Tuesday or something. I mean, if the hardware maker puts out a driver, there's no reason you couldn't get it. It's worth always checking with the hardware makers in case, especially the big ones like Dell and HP and Lenovo. And actually, Samsung does this as well. They have utilities that can always ensure your drivers are the right drivers and all that kind of stuff. And that's useful. But yeah, I've seen some of the complaints and I saw the benchmark stuff. I'm not sure what to say about it. I just don't experience it. I mean, you know, the 8-inch Windows tablet I have is terrible, but it has 2 gigs of RAM, EMC, and, you know, it's, of course, it performs terrible. I expect, you know, it's the type of thing where you kind of hit something, you wait a second, then it does it, and then you wait a second, you know, and that's how it works. It's Windows 10 didn't kill it. It's just the way it is.
What was interesting for me, I built this computer. I mean, I built an entire studio over the week that I was in Los Angeles, and I built, you know, a powerhouse production machine. And I bought brand new Asus motherboard and the highest chipset, Intel chip that you could buy. And I went through the website and I'm looking through the drivers, obviously, to get the latest drivers. And I clicked on Windows 10 drivers. And even now, I mean, we're 2 weeks out, almost everything had Windows 10 drivers, except for like three or four things. And you're like, why? Why doesn't this have it?
What were the machines or where were they from?
Well, it was an Asus motherboard, and it was like on the motherboard. It was like
So these were custom design.
Yeah, yeah.
They were on the okay. So I was going to say, you know, from a PC maker, you could kind of make the argument that the components are from different places, right? So for on a Dell or a mainstream PC, you know, they get the stuff from Intel, and then they may customize it somewhere. They may not, you know, depending on what it is. With an actual motherboard, though, I mean, obviously you're getting the component drivers right from the source, I would imagine.
From Intel. And I didn't install Windows 10 on there. I'm sorry, not Intel, Asus. I didn't install Windows 10, 10 on there because it's not really necessary right now. Probably when I go out there in about a month, I'll probably put Windows 10 on it. But I just wanted to make sure that everything is working well.
What did you put on there?
I put Windows 7.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to put Windows 10, but there are some...
Yeah, but why, like, why though? I mean, I don't know what the machine does, but if it's one of those things that's in a studio and it's doing whatever it does every day, I mean, you might make the argument that Windows 7 is probably lighter, doesn't have as many extra processes running or whatever. It's, a lot of the benefits to Windows 10 are things that happen when you're a person and sitting in front of a computer, and it's cool. You can talk to it, you can do all the stuff, but you don't really need that stuff on...
You don't need this. Yes,
different kinds of computers.
You know what it is? Just I want it to be the latest and the greatest, and I want it to be on something that I'm also on. So when I upgrade my production machines to Windows 10, I want the production machine on that machine. I want the operating system on that production machine to be Windows 10, so I could troubleshoot it in the same way that I'm doing now. I don't want to say, wait a minute, hang on, let me go find my Windows 10 laptop, or let me go and find a Windows 7 laptop to see what's going on.
Completely understand.
And with software wise, you know, the main production software that we use, they are not guaranteeing you that it's going to work. They say, well, it should work. I don't know how you could sell software by saying, well, it should work. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
I haven't tested it on that exact OS version.
Yeah. Sure. It's interesting. So things are starting to settle down a little bit with this Windows 10 hoopla that's happening, or it's still going on?
Yeah. It's getting better. It's still going on. It's getting better.
Ooh, look at this. Hang on. I found something here. Mm-hmm. Dell XPS, 13.3-inch. There is an i7 model now.
Is there?
There is. And this is beautiful, this machine.
It is beautiful.
$1,500.
Yeah, it's not inexpensive. It's a nice little machine, though.
Yeah. $1,500. So do I buy a Mac or do I buy this?
Well.
You know what? I'm going to be patient.
What do you get for $1,500 on a Mac? What is
you get a trackpad.
Yeah. No, the trackpad works. I mean, the trackpad on the Mac is better.
Yeah,
the XPS doesn't have a real sense camera. You know, there's no fingerprint reader. It's kind of a tough one. I mean, the Spectre also doesn't have either of those things, but it's, you know, it's bigger.
So here's another question for you. I'm just going through the email. I'm going to do a lot of that today, Paul.
Okay.
If you've noticed.
All right. I'm going to drink.
Yeah. Initially, when I first saw the XPS, it didn't have an i7. I guess they released it a little bit later, so there was an i7. So I take it back before I get the emails telling me, Andrew, you're an idiot. There's an i7 model. I am an idiot. There is an i7 model. I agree with you. So 2 weeks ago, we were talking about some driver issue that I was having where it wouldn't allow me to install the driver. It was blocking it. And even after I unblocked it, it still told me that the certificate wasn't updated and I couldn't do it. So I had to actually go into Command Prompt as an admin and install it via Command Prompt. On the enterprise version of Windows, will I, as an admin, be able to go into some sort of setting and say, no, relax, I want to install this without having to... You know, are we going to have more settings like that? Because I know that we have access to admin panels in Pro compared to home user, but are we going to get more with Enterprise? And would one of those be one of them?
No. You as a user of the client OS is not going to have any additional control. That control comes from a policy standpoint that would require some kind of management infrastructure, Active Directory or Intune or something like that. So, no.
Yeah, okay. So my theory
and
is
actually more than that. It's not just that. You also need a servicing agreement with Microsoft, and depending on the level, you get different capabilities with what you can do with updates.
Yeah.
And,
you know. I mean, obviously the quicker solution to this is having the driver maker actually update the driver for Windows 10 and be aware of it. But if you are running some sort of weird proprietary driver for some strange software or hardware that you're running, that's going to be a little difficult for them to act so quickly. But I was just curious to see if on an enterprise version, you could go in there and have more admin settings and to turn off that security measure. I think it's a little pushy, in my opinion, with the security measure, because there's nothing that I could turn off other than going and installing as an admin via Command Prompt.
Yep.
I mean, it's easy, right? I mean, it's easy. You could do it.
No, you're not going to have any.
Oh, okay.
No. Sorry. A lot of the extra stuff that's in enterprise is about preventing things, not allowing them.
Okay.
So, you know, if you want to think about it that way, general.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it gives you additional capabilities, but it's mostly about control.
Okay. All right. Another question here from, have you seen anything with the new, with an updated version for RT? Have you seen it, actually? Have you seen these features that have been implemented that are kind of like Windows 10 in there?
No. Over the weekend, I got a ton of internal information about Windows 10 that would have been very helpful about 2 months ago. and among the information that was in there. And it was right before I got sick. And I thought, man, I'm going to have all this stuff to write. It's going to be fantastic. And one of the items was the two things that would be getting updated in Windows RT as part of that update that isn't Windows 10. And I thought, this is great. This would be a great exclusive, you know. And, of course, Microsoft has subsequently mentioned it on some website somewhere. So I woke up on, I don't know if it was Monday or whatever, and everyone had written, oh, this is what's coming.
Yeah.
And I looked at the stuff I had, and it really doesn't have any more information. It basically just says that Windows RT users are going to get updates for the start menu and for the lock screen that are related to the updates that are in Windows 10.
Okay.
Now, start screen, you know, we have to speculate, because does that mean you get like a start menu and you can make it full screen, or does it mean you only get the full screen version of the start screen? Because that might make some sense for Windows RT.
But this is almost like a deja vu moment for Microsoft, because didn't they kind of hint that Windows Phone 7 users were going to get an updated UI that was similar to Windows Phone 8? And they didn't get it?
Yeah. No, they did. 7.8.
7.8, yeah.
But almost no one got it.
Almost no one got
yeah.
it.
And it was very similar. It was some of the it was mostly start screen stuff. You're right. You remember this better than I do. But yeah, that's right. That's right.
I always like it when you compliment me. I always like that. Well, it's rare for me. Two weeks in a row. I'm batting 1,000 2 weeks in a row right now.
I am old and decrepit. So, you know. But yeah, you know, you're right. It's interesting. I would never have made that parallel, but that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a very similar thing, and for the sake of RT users, I hope they get it.
Like Windows 7 Phone 7 users.
Yeah.
Look, I get the people who have RT are upset. I do sort of understand that. On the other hand, there are certain Microsoft products that have come out over the years that I have viewed as appliances, you know. For example, when you buy like a Windows Home server, if you buy the like an actual server, to me this thing is a server. You know, it's like it's a NAS. It's a box that you put somewhere and you connect a network cable to it, and it does what it does. The notion that this thing will be upgradable to the next five versions of Windows Server or something is, I don't think, in the contract. You know, I think people sort of assume this, and so when Microsoft made a version of Windows Home Server that was less powerful, and then they kind of canceled Home Server and went to Server Essentials. A lot of people really burned. It's like, I have this first-gen Windows Home Server. How come I can't upgrade it? And I was like, one of the reasons is it only has 512 megabytes of memory, you know, or whatever. But there are many reasons. You know, it has a really crappy processor, whatever. But, I mean, to me, that thing was an appliance. You bought it, and you leave it there, and it does its job. And if the thing ever starts breaking down, then you think about replacing it. But you don't upgrade it. Like, it's not really designed for that. And Windows RT, I mean, look, the promise and the reality are absolutely different. Originally, this thing would have been updated along as we went along and all that kind of stuff. But the truth is, there were only two gens of RT-based surfaces. Neither one of them is particularly powerful.
Yeah.
There are almost zero examples of second-gen RT from anyone else. And so a lot of the RT devices that are in the world are first-gen Surface RT, or like a Lenovo or some kind of random – I don't remember which machines were out there in the world that, you know, frankly, are sort of like ARM-based netbooks. And the notion of people fuming because they don't get the next major update to Windows is semi-ludicrous, because that should never have been expected anyway, not really. I mean, a machine like that is what it is. You get it. And you use it, and then at some point you kind of move on. And anyone who used that thing and saw how underpowered it was from day one and didn't return it to the store had to have known this thing was not lasting 5 to 8 years. Like, this is a short-term proposition, a relatively inexpensive device. I thought there was some kind of interesting value to Surface RT in particular, but I just the kind of outrage over this is semi-misplaced. You know, Microsoft made a mistake. You backed the wrong horse by buying the product. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go back and look at everything I've wrote about Surface RT or Windows RT. I mean, I complained about this thing fairly regularly. I mean, and it was just, you know, poorly served by badly performing hardware and all that kind of stuff. So,
but we knew for a while. I mean, I remember the first time that we spoke about Surface RT and Windows RT, we knew that this was not the future of this type of device, right? Like, we kind of predicted, like, well, they're probably going to change this later down the line, where they're going to have to
Well, right. So the thought was that this thing would merge with phone and it would become a touch-based deal. That this would be the OS for devices, you know. And that when Microsoft was, I mean, they were planning on removing the desktop from these devices, right? It is what became Windows 10 Mobile, except Windows 10 Mobile is not just on ARM. That was the point, you know, that it was heading toward this device future. They kind of released it a little too early. They had to include the desktop. They had to put Office on there because they didn't have Office mobile apps that made any sense. They did some goofy stuff because they kind of had to. I think the problem is a lot of people look at this thing and it's got a keyboard, it's got a trackpad, it's got Office, it's got a desktop. This is Windows. What the hell? I know that I can upgrade Windows. Why can't I upgrade this thing? And it's like, well, I guess you could technically have bought a Windows 7 starter-based netbook in 2010 or something. And I guess you could upgrade that thing to Windows 10. But I've not tried that, by the way. But my expectation is that experience would be terrible. And that to expect Microsoft to actually take the engineering and time and effort and cost to make a version of Windows 10 just for RT and then support it for the next X number of years is ludicrous. I mean, and who would want such a thing?
Yeah.
Because their A guys are not on this. No one important is working on it. No one cares about it. So if they released it, it would be a disaster. And it's kind of worse having it than it would be not having it. So I get it. I get it. But I kind of don't get it, you know? So they're throwing people a bone, I guess. It's nice. It's a nice gesture. They don't really have to do it. We'll see exactly what it looks like when it comes. But I don't know. I don't.
Well,
it's something I can't get excited about. I just can't get angry about it. It just doesn't seem important.
Well, I just got an update on my phone. Hangouts is now different.
Yes, it is.
And it's very different. It's very bizarre. Have you seen this?
Uh-uh.
I have no idea what's going on here. They changed. Like, it looks totally different. Wow. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I feel like I've entered another world right now. My phone just kept buzzing, and now I feel weird. No, listen, I think the future of RT was never to be... I mean, it was also, remember the whole ARM thing. Maybe this was them rushing to just get on ARM devices. I remember that major announcement where they had all these HP laptops, and they go, this is all ARM on Windows, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was like, what are we doing here?
Why are we doing this?
It wasn't even clear. It's like, look, this thing can print. Well, right. It's like, it's a Windows computer. Of course it can print. You know, but it was never clear, like, why that was important or why, you know.
I mean, was it important for Microsoft to tell? I guess maybe it was to kind of freak Intel out a little bit and say, hey, listen, guys, you got to get your act together because your performance is really bad on mobile chipsets, on mobile platforms, and we're getting crushed right now.
That was the result. I mean, it's disingenuous to suggest that Microsoft, with some prescience, said, look, Intel's never going to get into this mobile thing if we don't prod them into it, so we'll adopt ARM just to freak them out. I mean, it was actually a major engineering challenge to make this happen. So they clearly did feel that ARM was the future of something, right? And so I would say that the benefits of this system are kind of the same as the benefits of Edge in Windows 10, which is that the Edge, the web browser, in that you can shed a bunch of legacy garbage. And in doing that, you make a system that's smaller and lighter and faster, you know, maybe, and has less attack surface, right? So a lot of the legacy code that could be vulnerable to ancient attack or new attacks or whatever is not there anymore. And that's good. There's a good thing to that. The bad problem with starting over, and it's the same problem they have in Edge today, is that you're starting over. And so you hit all the high points. There are things that you're missing.
Yeah.
You know? And in the case of Windows RT, some of the things it was missing were fairly dramatic. For example, acceptable performance, especially in the first generation. And then also just compatibility with desktop applications. You know, there are, I think the figure that was quoted to me a couple of weeks ago, 16 million discrete Win32 applications out in the world. 16 million.
16 million.
And of those, zero ran on RT. I mean, they ported, you know, their own, a couple of their own things. But
was there any? I don't know if I've asked you this. Was there any notion that they would possibly get those applications kind of work on RT?
You know, when the they So obviously the Office 2013 version that shipped with the initial version of Windows RT, which was just I think the four basic it's like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, if I'm not mistaken, were the Office 2003 Win32 versions of the apps ported over. They were missing some features because they, it was kind of you hit the recompile button and see what happens, and then there's a bunch of garbage or whatever, and obviously we need all the main functionality, but you get to some of the more esoteric features and maybe you have to cut them out just to get, ship the product.
Yeah.
But those things ran fine, right? And then a year later, they got Outlook working. And Outlook was something they had intended to have in the beginning, but it had, I think it was memory and performance issues or whatever the problem was. And they eventually figured out a fix for that. And so, Outlook came. Now, if you have an RT device, you can have Outlook as well. That work, you can look at that and say, well, clearly there's a way to get Win32 apps working. And if ARM had taken off as a platform for Windows, I suspect they would have done that. They would have given developers the ability to port their code. They would have, we would have seen things like, I don't know if we would have seen these exactly, but, Chrome and iTunes, there would have been no reason for them.
Sure.
Not, there would have been plenty of reasons for them not to, but maybe they would have, ported those apps or whatever.
It might have been a different world, right?
Yeah,
it's
a big what? No, it's a big what if. I mean, yeah. There's good and bad to doing that kind of stuff, and I think the central problem with RT is RT was never
the central problem. Let's focus in on the central
because there were a lot of problems. I mean, the people who were kind of burned by this are kind of average users.
Yeah,
because who would buy a Windows RT device, right? I mean, it's like a consumer. It's not like a tech person,
I think a lot of people bought it, though. I think even regular,
Well, but that's what I'm saying. In other words, like, they should have known better. It would be like, if Microsoft came out with, a My Pretty Pony kind of thing, you don't just buy it because it's from Microsoft. I mean, do you actually need this kind of a device, And Windows RT was in its initial, in the only way it ever shipped, really, was just never powerful enough to handle real work. And so someone who was a technology enthusiast or someone who was a power user of whatever kind was never going to be well served by this device. We're making the same mistake today. I flew to France here with a Winbook 8 tablet, which is a piece of junk. For kind of 8-inch Windows tablets, it's actually pretty good, but that's the bar is pretty low there. So we make these mistakes. I'm not, when Windows 11 comes out, Windows 11 is never coming out, but I'm just kidding. But if Windows 11 were to come out, I'm not going to be up there in my bullhorn complaining that I can't get the free upgrade to Windows 11. Like,
yeah,
this machine can't run Windows 10 fine. Why would I, what's the difference? Like, it just doesn't matter.
I mean, I've already seen the emails and today, and I'm talking specifically about it because I've had 2 weeks to kind of sit here and to kind of read and to kind of understand.
Kind of stew in
in the Windows 10 onslaught juices. When you're looking at this, and I don't mean this as an insult to anybody that has sent this, but you should know better that you're going to have a bad experience running this on a 10-year-old machine, on a 10-year-old laptop. You're going to have issues with it when you're running it on a dual core Intel or a core 2 Intel, whichever one was the first one, from 2004. I'm not trying to run this on an AMD Athlon. You're going to have problems. And the people that are trying to do this, you should know better that you're going to have issues. I've gotten a ton of emails from people. I mean, just telling me that they're having problems running their laptops, running Windows 10, and it's bogged down. And you find out the machine's from 2005.
Excluding more modern Atom processors, because that stuff has just been available.
Yeah.
I would say, roughly speaking, with this is just off the top of my head, if you have like a Core 2 Duo kind of thing, don't even think about it. That's ridiculous. If you have a core processor of some kind, we can talk, right? We're in the, fifth, sixth generation of those things now. And so we're still talking several years, first couple of gens,
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, what's the dividing point? I mean, personally, on a laptop or computer of any kind, 4 gigabytes of RAM would be some absolute minimum for just web browsing and running Word. I mean, for me, I don't understand getting along with less than that.
Yeah.
8 gigabytes would be way more acceptable. 16 on a desktop, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I just don't, you know, it's just you spend a lot of time kind of trying to shoehorn stuff into something when you really would have been better off just spending $500 or $600 and just buying a new computer. You know, I don't understand the
Less of a headache. I mean, forget about upgrading.
It's just going to hate yourself.
I mean, the other thing is, okay, so you have these, you know, these HP lower end. I think it was an HP. There was one that was put out. I just saw an ad, 189 running Windows.
Yes.
Well, what's so my experience going to be on that device? I don't know. I have yet to get an email from someone, and I please tell me if you have, if you are running it on these HP 14 streams. Tell me how your experience is.
That was my exception. So here's the thing. The experience is not very good, you know, and that's the thing. So in other words, when you talk about modern Intel processors, in this case, you know, Core Gen 3 or up or something. So we're talking last five years or whatever it is. You're going to have a great experience in that stuff. No problem. That'd be fine. The last couple of years have been kind of weird because, you know, to keep the PC industry going, you know, Microsoft lowered the licensing on Windows, especially on cheap, small devices. And we get those devices in the market that are like the HP Streams, so the 13 and the 11, the small tablets. In that market, those HPs are actually pretty good devices, right? That's the thing. I mean, they're kind of cool. Like, they're nice little devices. But I think you can make the argument that you would make with Windows RT, that you would make with these mini tablets, that these things are Windows Home Server, to use that example. These things are utilities. They're appliances.
Yeah.
That you might not want to screw with that thing. You know, when you have a machine that has 1, maybe 2 gigs of RAM, when you have a machine that has 16, maybe 32 gigs of storage, eMMC storage, a non-touch screen, you know, used by a child, hopefully, not by an adult. Are we going to, you know, honey, come in here with your little My Pretty Pony computer. We got to upgrade it to Windows 10. It's important.
Listen, I like those My Little Pony ones. I like the ones from the 90s that had what was the race car one? It's like Mattel, like what was those fake race cars? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? The Matchbox. Yeah, the Matchbox Windows 98 laptop. I like those.
Yeah.
That's what I'm on right now.
The point is, you leave them alone. You know, I think that's the I don't know. You know, again, it's the same problem with RT. You look at it and you say, but it's Windows. You can do this to Windows. And you can, but I wouldn't screw with something that works. You're not going to upgrade like an HP Stream 7 or 8 or an HP Stream 11 or 13 and experience it dramatically. You know, it's not going to be dramatically better. I don't know why you would do that to yourself. Yeah. It's not the fault of HP, right? I mean, they're great machines for what they are. I would say in that market for those 11 and 13-inch kind of really low-end machines without touch and in those markets for – you know, Windows mini tablets. I mean, they're neat for what they are, but I don't know. It's just such a bad decision to do that.
Oh boy.
Don't you think that's the sound?
What do I know? I'm going into Reg Edit and I'm going into Group Policy Editor and I'm turning crap off. I'm a lunatic.
Every single machine I just mentioned, I've upgraded all to Windows 10. So yeah, I mean, and maybe that's where this comes from because. The experience, especially on the mini tablets, was horrific. I just don't recommend it. It's not because any of the pieces are bad. It's just cause, like, come on, you bought this stupid little thing to do some stupid little thing and just let it do that thing and don't treat it like it's some enterprise class machine that needs to be put in a queue and upgraded to the latest version of the OS. Like, I don't think it really makes any sense. For most.
It is what it is. All right, Paul, time to wrap it up. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Hey, guys, we're going to stick around for a couple more minutes. We're going to do our after show, What the Talk. We record it live each and every week following What the Tech. We talk about whatever the case may be, and a lot of the last couple of weeks, a lot of the time, we've been talking about things from Tech Pass. We've been doing a Throwback Tuesday. If you're watching live, stay tuned. We're still going to continue the show. If you are listening to the podcast, you could access this on patreon.com/whatthetech. This is for our Patreon viewers. You could watch it by funding us. We accept everything. You could give us a nickel. You could give us a quarter. You could give us a dollar. Whatever you think you want to do, go ahead and fund us. It helps us along the way. It helps us with upgrades. I think I'm going to get Paul a new headset for when he goes away.
Oh, what?
I don't like it that much.
So here, I usually bring like the big. I don't know if they're Plantronics. Those big things.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this. I think I got this with like Rosetta Stone software or something. Okay. The reason I brought it was because it's so small.
Okay, so I have an idea. I would like to get you an ATR 2100 USB microphone.
Okay, I don't know what that means.
It's a very, very good microphone. Thank you. Look at this. We have great interns here. They got me coffee.
Well, did they get you an AR-2113, whatever you
said? No, an AR-15? Yes. I'm going to need it sometimes. I need an AR-15 rifle at that time. It's called the ATR-2100 USB mic. I have become a huge advocate for this microphone. It works great. It's $35, and it'll sound as good as what I'm on right now. I mean, the thing is unbelievable. So I'm going to get you one of those. So whenever you go away, just pop it in, and you're good to go.
Okay.
You'll sound wonderful.
All right.
If you insist. You could buy it, guys? You could buy it on Amazon. And whenever you buy something on Amazon, go to
GFQ. Can I buy it on Fnac?
Fnac? What is that?
It's the French version of Best Buy.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I would not recommend it, to be honest.
Okay.
Go to Amazon, gfq.co/Amazon. Whenever you purchase something on Amazon, bookmark it, and I get a tiny little credit from it. It helps us out in the long run. All right, guys, we're going to end the show here. If you're watching live, stay tuned. What the Talk is up next. See you next time.